leavened loaves embody bread that is in its finished and most complete state. It is luxurious, delicious. Because of that, it would be arrogant to utilize it as an offering. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, episode 116, The Leavened Loaves and the Meaning of Freedom. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10 Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by the sun of York, and all the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. So speaks Richard III at the beginning of Shakespeare's play named for him. The beginning, of course, like so much in Shakespeare, reflects a pun, son, S-U-N, and son, S-O-N. After the war between royal families, after the War of the Roses, Richard III is saying, the son of York, meaning his brother, has changed the winter of discontent into a summer. The son, S-O-N, is a son, S-U-N. But of course, Richard III is not sincere. He does not want his brother to rule. He wishes to rule. He, in the play, is possessed with a sense of ego and entitlement and arrogance. And in fact, this very speech reflects what is in his heart. The Shakespeare scholar Marjorie Garber puts it this way, quote, notice that the speech begins with a characteristically duplicitous enjambment. Its syntax seems, blamelessly, to say that the former winter of our discontent, when the Plantagenets were defeated and eclipsed by the Lancastrians and by Henry VI, is now made glorious summer by the rise of Edward IV, the son, S-O-N, and son, S-U-N, of York. But the blank first line, now is the winter of our discontent, plays against the syntax to make it clear that now still, at the present time in which he is speaking to us, Richard dwells in wintry discontent, even though, or perhaps because, his brother Edward is on the throne. The rhythms of this long speech, 40 lines but only 5 sentences, are insistent and solipsistic. Richard is the supreme egotist, and his world is all within himself. He speaks rhetoric rather than simple truth, even to himself. For Jews, the process from winter to spring to glorious summer is marked by 2 korbanot, 2 offerings. There is first, featured in an earlier episode of 10 Minute Mitzvah, the Omer, the first barley brought during the holiday of the festival of Matzah, known as the Chag HaAviv, the holiday of spring. Then, later in the year, indeed after counting 7 weeks from the Omer, on the festival of Shavuot, another offering is brought in the temple. This, marking the ripening wheat, is composed from solet, fine flour, and, more importantly, it is fashioned into loaves, 2 loaves, and these loaves are unlike any other in any communal offering anywhere in the Torah. And rightly understood, what is taking place in this ritual is a precise balance between personal humility and joy in the sanctification of God's people through the giving of the Torah. Let us unpack all this to see how this is so. The mitzvah that we are discussing is known as Shtei HaLechem, the 2 breads, and though I refer to them as an offering, that is not exactly accurate. For technically speaking, they are not a korban, for not a bit of them are offered on Shavuot on the altar. This because, surprisingly, they are meant to be leavened, or in the words of the Torah, chametz teafena, you shall bake them as chametz. And as we have already seen, the Torah prohibits the offering of any leavened grain product on the altar. Thus they are brought close, they are waved in the presence of God by the priest, but not a bit of it is thrown into the sacred fire. It is instead eaten entirely by the Kohanim, by the priests. What is going on here? We see first and foremost that even if chametz is not allowed on the altar, there is nothing about it that is deemed repulsive by the Torah. We can thus reject the theory of H.E. Jacobs in his famous History of Bread, wherein he reflects that leavened grain products were not allowed on the altar because the decomposition involved in the leavening process clashed with the Jewish seeking of purification. Or as he put it, quote, the Jew's sense of cleanliness and purity prohibited him from offering his God matter in dissolution, end quote. But the very fact that leavened bread is brought before God highlights how this is utterly untrue. And as we will see in a later episode, leavened loaves also appear as part of the process of another rite in the temple, that of the Todah, thanksgiving. Rather, and here I am drawing on the explanation of Rabbi Yoel ben Nun, what we are seeing here is the balancing of the expression of two separate spiritual messages. Leavened loaves embody bread that is in its finished and most complete state. It is luxurious, delicious, but because of that, it would be arrogant to utilize it as an offering, for it would seem that we were making an expression about ourselves, that we are in a state of completeness, whereas of course we are not. Yet at the same time, the bringing of these sophisticated, splendid leavened loaves into the temple allows us to retroactively reflect on the festival of freedom that occurred 7 weeks before, a festival marked by matzah, loaves baked before they were allowed to achieve a fully sophisticated and complete state. We are thus reminded that the events commemorated on Shavuot, God's descent on Sinai, the giving of the Torah, his covenanting with his people, was the destiny toward which the original liberty was launched. Only then was one of the central purposes of liberation achieved. Like a dough that rises, the story of God's people is one that unfolds in stages. On the festival of Matzah, the fetters of Egypt evaporated and the Exodus occurred. But there was a goal to this liberty. For so God said to Moses, in describing the purpose of the Exodus that was to come, "V'lakachti etchem li la'am v'hayiti lachem le'elokim." I will take you to me to be a people, and I will be for you your God. There appears to have been an Ashkenazic tradition at one point to utilize the two challahs, the two loaves, on which the blessing of the Shavuot Eve meal was said in an unusual way. First, one loaf was eaten with a dairy meal, and then the second loaf, which had been separated from the first, was utilized with a meal of meat, so that each loaf, as it were, was loved, each one cherished, and thereby the two loaves of the temple of Shavuot were remembered. This may seem like a lot of eating, which would of course not be the exception in Judaic life. But in truth, that meal and the original loaves that they remember allow us, as we eat our matzah 7 weeks earlier, to realize that if we have freedom, we have been given it for a purpose, and the journey towards Sinai was not only an episode in Exodus, it is the journey that we take as we grow in our lives. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.